Yeah, call the working group to order. We are a working group. Good morning, everybody. Thank you all for showing up again. Just to get started, I know Joel Carlson has another appointment somewhere, so why don't you come up right away and give us a little bit of a perspective from the resorts and what they're thinking and how things are going and where they would like to see this whole thing go. Okay, so go ahead. Just say your name for the record, Joel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. And for about 20 years, I've had the honor of representing a group called the Congress of Minnesota Resorts. They are family-owned businesses in Minnesota, some of whom are sitting around the table like the Chapmans, and it is really an honor to represent them. And I'm very passionate about resorters and resorting because they're so central to tourism in Minnesota. And, you know, resorting is a way of life for these people that live at their resorts. They live it every day, 24/7. But it's a quality of life issue for Minnesotans as well. And that's why we really appreciate the effort that you're putting forth to look at this problem and the economic issues that these businesses are going to face as a result of some state decisions. You know, we once had almost 3,000 resorts in Minnesota in the late 60s and early 70s. We're down to about 800. We lose about 20 a year. And once a resort is sold for private development, it never comes back. And so what that means to the local economy, and I didn't hear anyone mention this yesterday, but for every dollar spent on lodging at a resort translates into $3 of local tourist spending. And so having these resorts and that lodging available for Minnesotans to enjoy our great resources is critical, and we appreciate the time and attention that you are placing on this problem. And tourism is a huge business in Minnesota. It employs 250,000 people. It generates 17% of the state's income tax, and it's about a $13 billion industry in Minnesota. I'd like to, Mr. Chairman and members, as I've talked with resorters around the state and listened to both state officials and legislators, I kind of like to organize my thoughts into four main categories. When we finished yesterday, it was kind of a what do we do now? I don't know that this is a framework of what to work on, but this is where I've picked up from the community as things that I think we should at least consider. First and foremost, I won't dwell on it. You'd spent almost 2 hours on it yesterday. You need to fix the fishery. That's critical. Nothing helps this problem more than customers and tourists. So that's job one, and we appreciate that. Job two, I think, is some short-term help. You know, many businesses that in the Mille Lacs area are going to be impacted differently because of the decision that the state made. And I'm looking at some kind of a system. I'm more with Senator Scoy as far as either a forgivable loan or a claim that a business can make through the claims committee or some other mechanism where they can demonstrate their justifiable losses as a result of that decision. I don't want to second guess the decision, but the decision has been made and it's having an economic impact. I think it is not a prescription for prosperity to replace that lost income with debt. And so I hope we can fashion a way that we can compensate those direct losses that are truly attributable to the decision that the state made, and I'd like to see us work on that. You know, we've done compensation funds. I worked on the I-35 bridge compensation fund. I've worked on others. I know that there is a way where the legislature can fashion a program where you can compensate those businesses that are directly impacted for these losses, and they're not going to be all impacted the same. Secondly, fix the fishery, short-term help. The third thing that I think Mr. Edmund talked about yesterday is promotional help. We've had a few whacks in the media on some bad news, and we need to let everybody know, and I've been telling my friends in the media, and I'll turn around and tell them now, we are open for business. Resorting and tourism in Minnesota is a diverse, diverse activity. There are many things that you can do in Minnesota, and while this is a setback, we are open for business. Next time you have a committee hearing, come up and do it in the lakes area. We need to get people to come to the lakes and not let this setback let everyone think that we are closed for business, because we are not. So promotional help, short-term and long-term, is very beneficial, and the media can help us there as well by promoting some of the great things that are going on in the lakes area. And lastly, Mr. Chairman and members, I think the things that you're talking about for long-term stability for resorts are very helpful, particularly at a point of time right now where you have resorters that have poor cash flow or no cash flow and a bad-looking balance sheet. When you're talking about property tax abatement, low-interest loans that they probably couldn't obtain from a bank because of the way their business is being operated right now, those are very helpful. And what resorters are doing across Minnesota is diversifying their amenities, they're upgrading their facilities, they're building reunion houses. What are they? They're adding technology. I mean, it's hard to get kids to pull their head out of their app, but, you know, it's, you know, it is really, really important that they upgrade their facilities, and having access to capital to do that, particularly when your business is at a downturn, maybe not through any fault of your own, are very important. And so those are the four areas, Mr. Chairman, that I think, you know, we'd like to see you look at. And as I listened yesterday to the DNR's presentation, I am not optimistic that any fishing will be opened again in this season. So I don't think that they're going to double clutch on that decision to close it. I don't know about the winter business, and that's why I think waiting until March for many of these businesses is just too late. And so I do hope that you consider taking action when possible. I don't think it's maybe by the end of August, because you might not know all the impacts, but it's certainly, to me, before March 8th of 2016. And if you can get the help out there now, this is not the worst time to be upgrading your facilities. You know, you've got people that have the time. These people do their own work. They build their own cabins. They do their own plumbing. This is a time for them to upgrade their facilities if you are going to provide assistance. We already have in statute a tourism loan program that's operated. Indeed, it's 116J.617, where we have a mechanism. It would need some tweaking to allow people to do it, but it's a revolving loan fund. And if you can provide that kind of assistance to allow them to invest so that when they are back open for business, they have attractive amenities in a way that's financeable, that's very helpful. So, Mr. Chairman, those are my thoughts. I'm happy to answer questions. This is, you know, really... I know many of you have heard me plead the issue for resorts many times over the years. I know Representative Erickson's heard me dozens of times in her education committee about the school calendar. But, I mean, these are really important things that you guys can do to help this sector of the tourism economy, and we appreciate everything that you're trying to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson, for some of those kids with their heads in their apps. Yeah. They probably don't know what double clutching is, but I do, and I would like to see the DNR double clutch here and actually reopen the season at least until the end of Labor Day, until Labor Day is over. I think that that is a very good short-term solution, just because these resorts are experiencing immediate harm, and I don't think we can help them fast enough. But if we announced by Saturday that this season is going to be kept open for one more month, and there's some kind of an agreement made with the tribes as to the amount of fish that can be taken and who can have what, I think there should be enough minds in this room that they can sit down and figure out a way to do this, because I think there's also discrepancies as to the amount of fish that have been taken. And so there's got to be a way to get this thing open again before we actually have to weigh in with the legislative money here. But having said that, I'm going to try and get that discussion going here today, but there's more things to talk about. So go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I applaud that effort. I want to be realistic about it, however. But you also need to know that many of the resorters that have experienced cancellations are not going to rebook those. They've made other plans for that week. The guests have made other plans for that week. So simply opening up the season may be, you know, maybe good for the gas station or the restaurant or maybe the launch services, which are important. I'm not certain that that is going to be a quick fix for the resorters, because a lot of people who are on the walleye mindset only have already, I think, cut and run in a different direction. So I'm thankful for pushing that idea and that suggestion, and it may be very helpful. But for a number of resorters that have experienced cancellations already, that reopening may be a bit late. I want to be realistic about it. I want to put that on the table.
I'm tracking. Does anybody have any questions of Mr. Carlson? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just add to what Mr. Carlson said is that, Minnesota has a long tradition of trying to help these mom-and-pa resorts particularly. And part of the reason for that is because this is the way Minnesotans of more modest means have access to our lakes. And so it's extremely important that we're sensitive to these businesses, because that's how many Minnesotans have an opportunity to enjoy the lakes that we're so proud of in this state.
And Mr. Chairman, it's clearly in my notes, and I talked to Chair Hackbarth, and he wanted to make sure we didn't spend too much time, but we don't want to become the land of 10,000 lake accesses, and that's really what we're trying to avoid. This is your access to the resource that we're talking about for thousands of Minnesotans, and when we lose it, I think we lose something about our fabric and quality of life.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth and I talked a little bit earlier, and I'd like to just do a little bit of a review of yesterday and see where we can go with this. So I'll turn it over to Representative Hackbarth now, and you can go ahead and see what
you
think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a review, and after I go through the review, maybe other members of the working group can chime in. Maybe I forgot something. I think number one, we were talking about what the administration has in mind for economic packages that might be available, whether it be something that's available now or something that's going to require a possible session to solve maybe loans or grants or some kind of tax abatement, those kinds of things. Maybe we can review those things later. I think that's kind of the things that we talked about yesterday from that perspective. And then as far as the DNR is concerned, we talked about quite a number of different things about what you could do now, what might take legislation, etc. And maybe we can sort some of those things out here today. I don't know. But we talked about a cormorant issue, the predator fish that are in the lake, the small northern pike. We talked about maybe opening up the fish technical meetings to the public, or at least so they're open, maybe not so they can testify or something before those meetings, but at least so they're open and maybe not so secretive. Also, the ice fishing is a priority. We talked a little bit about that, about how important that is to the resorts. If we don't have walleye ice fishing this winter on Mille Lacs Lake, these resorts are going to go broke. And, I mean, it's just that simple. Ice fishing is a priority for just about you talk to folks on Lake of the Woods or Mille Lacs Lake, any of the big lakes, ice fishing is number one. That's a top priority. These folks are going to go broke if we don't know immediately, very, very soon, are we going to have ice fishing this winter on Mille Lacs Lake. I think stocking was another issue, whether we're going to allow stocking on the lake. We were talking about whether we're going to allow other fish brought in and stocked in that lake, or are we going to only use fish from Mille Lacs for that hatchery situation. We need to review that as well and what direction we're going to go there. I think some folks want to know, too, at what level does the lake have to get to before we decide we are going to do some critical stocking. So I think those are some of the things that we talked about yesterday. I don't know if there's something else that folks want to, something I missed, but eventually I think we should have the resort folks come up. I asked them to bring a little more detailed information about what they are looking at, and they're going to have a presentation. And then I also asked the administration to come forward with some things that, more specifically, what they might have to offer.
So
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I appreciate just sort of setting the context a little bit, and I appreciate your agenda for today. I think it's a wise agenda. I just wanted to put a little context into what the governor's proposal is all about. As I mentioned yesterday, we're in the midst of the largest single bond offering right now. It started at 9:30, it'll close at 11:30. And so, but it really kind of helps put into perspective what's going on. We just got an upgrade yesterday from Standard & Poor's on our outlook from stable to positive. But it really reflects what's happening in Minnesota. And there's a lot of good things happening, and I appreciate the Open for Business. Minnesota is, in general, open for business and doing very, very well. And when these kinds of things happen, the governor wants to make sure that we take the opportunity, as people have mentioned, to look out for other folks. I mean, one of the things that we typically do, we're used to disasters, and the legislature has provided disaster relief authority and money for the administration to act in times of natural disasters. That's something we're unfortunately used to doing. We know how to do that, and we try to help people out in those situations. We've expanded that this last session with the avian flu, which is another idea that's akin to a natural disaster. No one planned for this. It was unforeseen, where the legislature gave the administration even more authority and more dollars to respond to this situation. But these kinds of things happen, and they happen without any warning, obviously. And the Ebola thing last year is another example of where our infrastructure wasn't quite ready for some of the challenges that an Ebola threat posed. And so that was where the administration was able to spend some dollars. But as you know, we came to the legislature and asked for more money to reimburse for those particular costs. We cannot always repurpose money. The fact of the matter is the legislature appropriates money for certain activities, and that's how we spend it. And that's why we can do certain things in this situation, such as the accelerated local government aid payments that Commissioner Bowerly mentioned. There's some tourism ideas that we can do. But generally, the idea of a loan package or providing more direct relief to these folks affected is going to require some legislative action. And the governor's goal has been to try to prepare and present, and you'll hear more detail about that today, prepare some ideas and ways to do that immediately so that we can get these folks through this tough session. I respect Senator Scoy, and I know he runs a business. He understands that. I used to run a business. But in a business, if I have a no interest and some favorable term loans, I'm going to use that, and I'm going to take it to use it to my best advantage. I don't think we can put ourselves in the place of those businesses and the decisions that they make. We can't solve everyone's problem. We can't cure what's happened overnight. We can provide tools and opportunities for people to help themselves, and that's sort of the nature of the avian flu response. We provided direct loans, low-interest loans, for farmers who have to retool their farms in the advent of this new crisis. So I think what we really want to make sure that we provide this working group with ideas and suggestions to move forward. Clearly, the governor and the leaders have decided that this working group needs to assess these tools and whether they're worthwhile or whether we should go forward or not. We respect that, and that's why we're here, is to work with you and provide you with all the details that we can. But you know, really, when you think about it, Minnesota expects government to step up in times when the normal tools don't work. And in this situation, the normal tools that we have simply don't provide us the authority to go and make direct loans or to reimburse the counties if they decide to do property tax abatements. So that's I think, the dilemma here is, what do we do now? Should we do something right now and provide some tools and then see what happens? I mean, obviously, on March 8th, when the legislature comes back, there's an opportunity to do more long-term issues. But this is really a short-term package where we're really trying to provide immediate opportunities for people, especially those folks out in the Mille Lacs area. And the ripple effect of this, we understand. We see this. And it's not just the resorts. It's not just the restaurants. It's not just the gas stations. It's everybody around there. I mean, and when property values will potentially go down and has an effect on the tax base of the local county. So there's huge ramifications. And so the idea here from the governor's perspective is, let's step up, provide some quick, short-term opportunities, see if that helps, and obviously we're going to continue to monitor this. You're all going to continue to be on top of this, looking at different solutions, and doesn't mean we can't add more later on. But I just want to make sure that in the context of what Commissioner Clark-Sieben and Commissioner Bowerly and Director Erdman talked about today, we have some things we can do without legislative authority, but not very many. But we want to put on the table those things that we can do that are a little bit more if this group thinks it's wise to move forward with. So I just wanted to make sure that you all understood that that's the governor's motive here, is to provide immediate, direct help in a situation that was unforeseen, wasn't caused by these folks, and to see if we can get them through to the next. I mean, really, we need to look toward the next session on March 8th. So I just wanted to, I appreciate the opportunity to make those comments.
And I appreciate those comments, too, and I'm getting the same kind of feedback from the miners who had unforeseen layoffs. And so that's the kind of the dilemma that we're finding ourselves in here, is that, we've given this kind of help before. Does this actually rise to a special session type of thing? And if we can figure out a way to help these people without going into special session, we're probably doing ourselves a favor. But we'll see how that goes. Representative Hagbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner Franz, I agree with you that we have to put a package together, and I agree with the governor that we should be doing something in that regard. However, I think it's a mistake to go down that road and say we're going to have a special session, and that's all we're going to do. We need a long-term, comprehensive plan to fix this lake and fix the situation that we're in. And that's why this working group is here, and I think the governor, when he talked about doing something as a special session, wasn't just talking about throwing money at a situation and we're going to solve this problem. That's not the right thing to do, and I don't think that's what the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota want to see. I think they want to see us solve this issue, work in the area of how are we going to long-term solve this problem. I'm all for, and I think we need to do exactly what you just explained, and I think that's a smart thing for the governor to do, but I don't think we should be doing it without addressing the other part of the equation. We have to have a long-term comprehensive plan. I asked the DNR yesterday to maybe bring some more detailed information, just like I asked you to bring more detailed information today. I hope that they can have that and supply that to us today about what direction they're going to go. I asked the question yesterday, what's your fix? Well, they didn't really have an answer, and I didn't get much of an answer. I hope they have more of an answer today. Maybe they don't. But we have to move in that direction, along with coming up with the immediate economic package to help them through this crisis. And I think that Senator Tomassoni had a good idea. Maybe the tribes and the DNR can negotiate something to keep this fishery open for another month. I hope that can happen. I think that would be a direct economic benefit to the community right away. So that's the perspective I think that this and the things that this working group should have been working on in the beginning. I agree that all of that has to be taken care of.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hagbarth, for asking the DNR to provide us with some plans, perhaps at our next meeting, PowerPoint or handouts, so that we can see what it is they have in mind. But secondly, I have for years been requesting the DNR to provide us, the legislature, in particular me, because I represent half of Lake Mille Lacs, the costs of managing this lake since 1998. So I want to officially request that to this committee they bring a line item of the costs that have been incurred from the present back to 98, and that they also provide us with what their revenue sources have been for managing. And because this is a co-managed lake, and I have in front of me this great report from GWFLIC, the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, that they delivered to my office in 2009, I'm hoping that we can get an update on that, because this is excellent information for us to understand the co-management that goes on. And because they collect excellent data, I'm hoping that they will be willing to provide an updated report. This is the quota year 7-8 on spearing and netting from the 1837 Minnesota Ceded Territory. But I think that would be helpful for us to understand what this whole scope is. So I'm officially requesting those two things.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we can probably deal with that in the next meeting, Commissioner Weinberg.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I've asked for those.
Speaking near Mike, Commissioner.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair and Representative, I did ask for those numbers after our last discussion. I think they're in the works. I apologize. I was just texting to my folks over there to see if we can get you those numbers yet today.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, Commissioner Miriam is the last one to deliver to me those spreadsheets. So okay. I really respected his doing that. He was a great commissioner, as you know.
Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're starting to hit upon the real issue. It's the long-term issue, and I absolutely agree with Representative Hackbarth on this. But from the short-term perspective, I think we may have started to stumble upon the solution here, is that we're talking, Senator Scoy brought up zero-interest loans, which aren't going to work because they're not going to be able to, they can't float more debt. However, with the Legislative Claims Committee is exactly where state damages go to be heard and be adjudicated and sent to the legislature for consideration. It's entirely possible that, and when we're in the claim, and I'm on the Claims Commission, that it's entirely possible that we as the claims at the state of Minnesota could deem and measure the damage that and they could present their cases to us after they get the zero interest loans, and we could recommend to the legislature what we would do about it, because we would be liable for whatever damages that they might seek. So in a roundabout way, you could use existing structure with the zero interest loans to deal with the situation, because when you come to the claims committee, you have to prove your damage, and we may have to meet quite a few times, and as a member, I don't have a problem meeting a number of times, but it would, any of the loan forgiveness or any of the damages wouldn't be actually reversed until we got into the legislative session next year. If that's something that the resorters can deal with, I think we may have an avenue where we can deal with it short-term and long-term as far as the economic impacts to the area.
Okay, that's interesting. And I saw a couple of reports on television, and resorters were being interviewed, and that's exactly what one of the resorters said, was she doesn't need any more debt. And then another resorter said, we don't want a handout. And so it's all pretty interesting how that goes.
I think resorters would be open to, you know, looking at that type of a package if it could work for them.
Okay, well, this is a good segue into both the two of you. Why don't you, you want to sit up there? Do you want to sit here? Go ahead. Go to the testimonial table, and then we can take your perspective on this. And Okay, who wants to go first?
Well, good morning. I am Karen McCoy. I represent the Mille Lacs area. And Commissioner and all of you congressmen and commissioners, I can speak for all of us from Mille Lacs that we greatly appreciate your efforts and the governor's efforts on our behalf. The attention and the speed with which you're addressing this has not gone unnoticed by all of us. As was said earlier, Minnesota is open for business, and that's fantastic. Unfortunately, Mille Lacs isn't necessarily open for business. Let me tailor your wording a little bit so that when you do speak of our area, let's talk about walleye closing. Because people hear the closure word and they automatically think that we're shut down. So try to say walleye closing if you can, and maybe the media will pick up on that. Mr. Carlson already mentioned that this is attributable to a state agency. And the data that I want to present to you is to give you some perspective on that. We're not a group of businessmen, business owners, that mismanaged our businesses and went off on trips to Tahiti or wherever and mismanaged it. This is a result of environmental changes, as you heard yesterday, and government regulations. And it's not without warning. I guess I would disagree with that slightly, Commissioner Franz. It's not without warning. This has been going on for 18 years. 2 years after this began, resorters started complaining and raising issues. 5 years later, they were screaming, and now we are here pleading for our lives. You have two handouts in front of you, and this is what I will go over. And I believe there are handouts for many of the folks in the audience. So this data, as you heard yesterday, so I'm a biostatistician, so when we heard some of this information, when the commissioners kindly came to our area about a week and a half ago, I stepped up. So I gathered a lot of data in a very short amount of time. And so some of that data was from the businesses regarding the economic impacts on our community, and some of it was related to some of the challenges that we have with the DNR. And I'll let me clarify that in a few moments. So first of all, with respect to the economic impacts, if you look at your handouts, and I believe you have color copies to make it easier to follow along, the audience will have to suffer. If you look at the graph in the brown, you can see that just in the last year, on average, various businesses have lost 10% of their business, 6%. Vacation rentals, I got that data after I met with Governor, after we met with Governor Dayton. They've already lost 38% of their business just in the period of 1 year. Fishing-related businesses in 1 year, 26%. Over 3 to 5 years, which I don't have included on this graph, it's 41%. Those are some pretty scary numbers. And so I thank some of you for considering the idea that many of us will be wary of our ability to repay zero-interest loans. So any of the other options that you've just mentioned are much appreciated. And like you said, perhaps some of the businesses would not want a handout, and others can't take on debt. But if we can be flexible to work with them, I think we'll be successful. We also worked with Deed, and we appreciated your coming to the meeting. And you can see that, like you said, Minnesota is open for business. Even Mille Lacs County, when we looked at that data, they haven't had job losses as a county, according to the data from Deed. But three of our four communities around the lake, as you see in the green chart, Onamia, Garrison, Waukon, have lost between 4% to 10% of jobs just in the past year. And remember what I said, that this has been going on for 18 years. So not that you can multiply it by 18, but this is an ongoing trend. And finally, on this chart, I wanted to point out, I am a member of the Isle School Board, and this is a significant concern for us. Our school fund balance went from 10 years ago being over $2 million to in the end of June 2017, and I know I've already testified in front of your committee, Representative Hackbarth, at the end of 2017, we will have no dollars. We will have $0. The significant drops that you see currently and in the last year are not because we are mismanaging those funds. It's because we're really just trying to keep the doors open and offer our children basic education. And when I say basic, I mean we're getting the three R's and we're offering amazing things like art and band and choir. We're not offering Russian language studies. We're taking advantage of the technology, so a lot of our children are going to online courses and things to get that breadth of information. But we're just trying to keep the doors open at that school and provide a basic education. Our teachers, on average, could walk out the door and go within 30 to 50 miles to the next school district and make, on average, $10,000 more per year. Our staff is so dedicated, and we're grateful for them. So let me talk a little bit beyond the economic issues. On the second page, that's titled Comparison of Fisheries Data. As some of you have heard, I conducted a first-of-its-kind angler fishing survey, and I was able to speak with DNR personnel. And I mentioned it yesterday, and I'll mention it again. The cooperation that we've had from being able to work with Commissioner Landwehr's staff, as well as the Mille Lacs Band staff, has been phenomenal. This is an opportunity for us to unify as a community. You can see from this data that there are key similarities and differences, and there seems to be room for further discussion. For example, and this flies in the face of some testimony from yesterday, when you look at the comparison between the angler responses to my survey and the DNR's data that they collect through their data collection methods, I use two periods of time, the first half of July and the full amount of summer. Anglers say that 2.12% of their walleye were in that slot. DNR's data said 2.03%. And you can see over the summer, it was about 2.8 to 3.2%. So we are seeing similar numbers. We have places where we agree and that we can work from. One of the pieces that we have issues with and is room for discussion is one of the things that Chief Pereira had said was that in the first half of July, 67% of the walleyes that were reported caught and released were over 22 inches. In contrast, with all of the data from the fishermen, and these included fishermen, guides, and launch captains, as all of this data does, we only saw 5% of fish harvested over 22 inches. So if you can consider, again, when we talked some numbers yesterday about hooking mortality and the poundage, the first half of July, 2,000 pounds, the DNR says we caught 2,000 pounds, and they said five times that many fish, over 10,000 pounds, were killed as a result of hooking mortality. So the anglers are saying, wait, we only caught 5%. And the DNR is saying 6.67%. Those fish over 22 inches obviously weigh many more pounds than some of the smaller fish. So this is an area where we believe that there perhaps is some room for discussion, and it's how it's difficult to stomach that we've gone over our allocation by 3,000 pounds. Because if you looked at maybe somehow putting these numbers together, 10,000 pounds, we believe, is really overestimating the hooking mortality. Speaking of hooking mortality, if you look at the final chart, which is in yellow, the DNR has a very complex, robust, and well-published hooking mortality formula. And so they attributed 20% in the first half of July, or about 12% over the summer, to hooking mortality. Well, anglers only see one little piece of that, okay? So when you consider that there's this tension between the anglers, resorters, launch captains, and the DNR, part of it is a perception, because the way we see hooking mortality is what's floating on the water. Okay, so we don't see the ones that are carried off by birds. We don't see the ones that sunk to the bottom and maybe got eaten by crayfish and never float to the surface. So here's a place where it's some perception, and I think there's some room for discussion and better understanding, and potentially to redo that hooking mortality study on today's fishery, because that study was done 12 years ago. So this is some of the data, and I wanted you to have some perspective. And let me bring it back again to what we really want to focus on as Mille Lacs area representatives to this committee, our solutions. Like I said, we have a lot of cooperation going on in our community between businesses and with the band. We're doing a lot of things to try to work around this. This, like we said, this hasn't just happened overnight. So over the years, you've appropriated funds to us so that Tina, as executive director of the Mille Lacs Area Tourism, has been able to direct funds to promote diversification of the lake. So we haven't just been sitting around thinking the walleyes are not here and what will we do. We've been diversifying, promoting other areas of the lake, other aspects of the lake. But we haven't been able to upgrade our facilities, so when you think long term, that is something that is of great interest to all of us, because we can reinvest in that. Basically, when we started thinking about it, while we fix it, we're going to be marketing it so that if we can rebuild it, they'll come. Because if we spend all of this money and we get everybody to come back, and all they see are a bunch of dilapidated old businesses, how far have we, what have we gained? Finally, one other thing that I'd like to offer is we are all part of a community. And so any options that we're talking about here, please know that as resort owners, as business owners, we do not want to jeopardize others, whether that's the county government funding, the city county government funding, or locals. We want it to work for the entire community because the entire community is suffering. Thank you.
Thank you. And this presentation is one of the reasons that I'm thinking that reopening the fishing season right away or the walleye season right away is a good idea, because it appears that all the counting that we're hearing and talking about is formula-driven or guesstimates, and I don't know if we have accurate numbers or not, Commissioner, and whether or not they're actually the real numbers, but there's got to be a way to put together some kind of an agreement here with, and I don't, let me ask the resorters first if reopening the walleye season is a good idea. Maybe it's a bad idea. I don't know.
Well, I think that somebody already raised that point that it would be difficult to get some of those closings, you know, those things to come back. Let me say that just since the press conference announcing the walleye closure on Mille Lacs, the 10 businesses that reported data back to me have already lost $25,000 in bookings, in addition to people that are not booking. So instead of being full for Labor Day, instead of being full for the full moon in September and October, which are prime times for people to come, our reservation books are empty. So the dollar amounts don't even begin to talk about the other lost opportunities.
Well, and then, but there is the potential that if the walleye season is reopened, that bookings do happen for Labor Day weekend or even sooner, I would think. I don't know, but I mean, it would have to be a decision that's made rather quickly here, and I'm just, it seems to me there's got to be some kind of a solution where we can come up with some kind of a compromise to at least keep it open for till Labor Day. But anyway, you want to say something?
The damage is already done on it, but there is the potential to capture those that kind of do their last-minute bookings and maybe looking for somewhere to go. So that potential is still there, but there's no way to even gauge what we've lost or people that didn't call just with that announcement of the potential of it happening.
So is it worth our time to get the DNR and the tribes together to try and figure out how to reopen it? Or
I certainly think it's worth the time. You know, we've lost what we've lost, but it certainly could bring back, you know, some more opportunities and people that may come up who probably wouldn't because it was closed.
Tina, did you want to make a presentation?
On behalf of the tourism, you know, we've seen a proposal that Explore Minnesota Tourism has brought, and I just want to reiterate that tourism marketing dollars are critical to us, and we need them to combat the biggest PR disaster imaginable. And with that marketing, we still do need to remember that we have to have something to market. Therein lies all of the relief that we may get. Couple of the things that I want to touch on is I do believe the hatchery is a great idea. I think that dollars should be immediately set aside for that. But we can make that hatchery maybe possibly a tourist attraction. It could be an interactive hatchery. It could bring in some of the Ojibwe culture and use that to you know, enhance the visitors, what the visitors have in the area as well. We've got some great bike trail systems. Right now, the Sioux Line Trail has been paved. We've gotten two grants. The county worked diligently to get those. We've got part of it done. My understanding is that the last few miles of it, we lost the federal grant funding on that. So we have a bike trail that is about, what, three-quarters done. We also are trying to connect the state parks. We've had difficulty getting the last few hundred yards done to get into Father's Hennepin State Park to connect into that Sioux Line Trail. I believe that is slated for 2016. It would have been nice to have that done now, but everything, of course, has to be studied. You know, we need to be able to flood the market. We've done our marketing, but we need to flood it even more, so that people stop hearing the bad and start hearing the good.
Okay. Representative McNair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I kind of have the same idea you have. I think we should be exploring the opportunity to reopen it. And I guess I would like to know, and DNR to come back. You talked, Mr. Chair, about opening it between now and Labor Day. I think the other opportunity is after the water cools down. What if we reopened it for Labor Day? You know, the local tribe has been very generous and has said they don't intend to use the rest of their allocation other than the ceremonial that they want to do and should do. What about the possibility that those folks that are real serious and great business in the fall to get from Labor Day till the end of open fishing both have DNR come back to us with what if it was the same as before, the one with that short slot, or if it went to catch and release, because your hooking mortality is going to be substantially lower. You have the more serious fishermen that are there in the fall and women that know the way to minimize the hooking mortality. I guess I would like DNR to come back with
that option to look at what that can do to minimize the impact for these resorts, because I really agree with some of the other ones that have said here. I think we'd be premature to have a special session at this point, as much as I'm committed to helping these folks because the state acted, and that's different. But you need to realize many of our home communities are suffering for different reasons. Senator Tomasoni's, it's the iron mine and the China dumping their cheap steel. In my community, it's foreigners dumping cheap folders, and now my Smead manufacturing is closed down completely in Hastings, and hundreds of jobs are lost forever. We have to be real careful when we move forward with special session and what the parameters we set. Now, the state had actions here that impacted these folks, and I think that's extenuating circumstances that we need to recognize. But I just hope we'll keep all our options open and look at ways that we can minimize this. So, thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you. You want to comment on it? Okay. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things, and I, you know, those of us over in the House, we have to be careful about championing things that come from the Senate side, but I think Senator Osmond had some good ideas, and thank you for mentioning those. But it sounds like it's something we need to consider very hard. But I do want to talk about and build on what Representative McNamara just said a little bit here. And this, we got to look at this whole ecosystem, and I believe we're beginning to do that. I think the DNR is making a good effort there. But the hook mortality thing, this is not insignificant. And as you referenced, Representative McNamara, we got the hot time coming up here, and we've changed the way we fish. When I was young, all we used was for walleye was a jig and a minnow. Where do you catch them? In the mouth. What do you use when you're going out and you're on a launch? Slip bobbers. Where do you catch them? Down in the guts. Hooks in the guts. So it's a significant issue for the hook mortality, and you're going to see more and more of it, as Representative McNamara said, in the heat of August. So I think we need to tread carefully there. And there's a lot of things that we can consider here. But let's put it all on the table, and I respectfully, Mr. Chair, disagree that we should open in August. I just don't think that would be good for anybody. So let's work as we can through the issues. I think, Senator Osmond, you had a good idea for us to consider. Thank you.
So one Senate idea good, one Senate idea bad. So 50-50 we're batting. So
that works for me.
Yeah, 50-50. See, if we're playing baseball, we'd be making $10 million a year. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni. I think it's important that the DNR also look to the ice fishing season and be able to provide some security for these folks, because that's huge on Lake Mille Lacs. And if these resorters and other businesses don't know in September, I mean, that's almost too late, about whether or not there will be an ice fishing season for walleye. Of course, there will be for other species, but they have to really take a look at their numbers and reconcile these differences and give us indication. So I hope we know that at our next meeting.
Okay.
I do have a comment about Sandra saying that other species. What you need to realize is that the whole lake isn't conducive to all the other species. So those resorts that are on the east side, whatever, they don't have the, you know, their houses generally aren't going to be set for northern. It's not like I can set my houses in Isle Bay where they're abundant. It's not that way all over the whole lake. So finding the other species in the winter is much more difficult than doing that in the summer.
Okay. All right. Maybe we should go over to the commissioners and see what you've got that's either new or same or different or whatever it is you want to present to us, and let us know. I think we probably should hear options of both what can be done without a special session, and then what needs to be done if there is a special session. And if you just want, Commissioner Stephen, do you want to start this?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just wanted to provide a little bit more specifics on the data that we provided yesterday, the question on numbers. What sort of numbers are we looking at? So as I mentioned, we did a rough estimate from roughly the center of Lake Mille Lacs, 15-mile radius, 112 businesses. About 30% of those businesses are resorts. That includes, these are all hospitality, tourism-type businesses. It includes restaurants, hotels, bars, guide services, boat dealers, golf courses, marinas. Revenue for those businesses, 57% are less than $500,000. 20% are between $500,000 to $1 million. And then going all the way up, 10%, $1 million to $2.5 million, 4%, $2.5 to $5 million. So just to give you kind of a rough estimate of the local economy and what we're thinking about and looking at. As far as what deed, what we would, what we're looking at, thinking about, and what we wanted to bring to all of you today as some ideas to share for your consideration. You know, as we are looking at our programs, executing our programs, looking at potentially designing new programs, first and foremost, we are interested in taxpayer accountability and making sure that any program we would put out has appropriate controls in place to make sure that those dollars are used in the most effective way possible for the issue at hand, and then also looking out for the good of the state. And so along those lines, we landed on the 0% interest loans as that best option. We know that there are many unique needs that businesses have in the area, but in creating some sort of standalone program for the Mille Lacs area, we think that this is something that should be considered. As far as assisting businesses and making sure that they can use that capital right away, potentially deferring any sort of payments for the first 2 years is something that we think could be or should be considered as part of that package. A 0% interest loan with 2 years of deferred payments. We would follow a similar approach as done with our other programs, where we would develop contracts with nonprofit lenders in the local community to evaluate the loan applications and deliver those loan funds. We'd work with lenders to develop consistent underwriting criteria for the loans. Deed would review each application prior to providing those loans to the local lender. And we would envision a maximum of $100,000 per loan, 0% interest, potential of deferring payments for 2 years. And those loan payments could be made monthly by the business for up to 10 years. And that's to follow kind of what was done for the Red Lake situation in 1999. That's similar to that program. Up to 5% of the appropriation we would need to use for deed and the lender's administrative costs to get those loans out the door. And we would monitor the lender and the business and require reporting from the lenders to make sure that we are following through on how those loans are used and the results of those loans. So we offer that as one solution. We know there are other ideas that were presented today that that were good ones and that you all can discuss further, but wanted to bring that particular idea to the table. I also just wanted to address the question about repurposing of funds. Obviously, as commissioner, I do not have the authority to repurpose funds within my agency. All of our dollars are appropriated by the legislature for specific programs at deed. And this past session, the legislature decided where all those money should go for those programs. So any sort of repurposing would be pulling from an economic development program. Majority of deeds programs are focused around job creation, job expansion, encouraging economic development across the state. So any sort of repurposing would be pulling from that activity. And just to give you some an example of one program, our Minnesota Investment Fund, since July of 2013, has funded over $14 million in awards. leveraged $415,400,000 in private funds and created nearly 2,000 jobs. So we have some very specific measures from how those dollars have been used, and for any of our programs can provide further information there, but would not advise any sort of repurposing money should there be a legislative session where that would be accomplished.
Commissioner, is job retention part of the application for these businesses that get MIF money?
I think it could be. So, you know, we would look to you for recommendations on what all should be included.
Well, I'm thinking about the current language, though. Isn't job retention part of what the MIF fund is now?
But it's based around, our awards are based around job creation numbers and level of private investment made into a business expansion. And so it's not currently, that program is not a fit for what this specific need is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you, for the low-interest loans, we could state that no interest or no payments, no interest, at least for 12 months. That would be something we could indicate. And then the second part of the equation is MMB, Department of Revenue, we could, as a claims committee, look across multiple years to determine after their revenue numbers start coming in, and we see that, okay, this resort went from generating $10,000 worth of revenue to the state through taxes, that now it's dropped to 5%, we could actually back into the actual economic loss that these individual businesses are suffering to validate to the taxpayers, saying, listen, for the last 3 years they were here. Because we closed Lake Mille Lacs, it went down here. You could even show it by month to show what happened in August, what happened in September, October, November, and then the Legislative Claims Commission could use that as an indicator if they take the loan and decide that they want to petition to the state, to the Claims Committee, that hey, this, you know, we got a $100,000 loan, our damages are $100,000, we would like the Claims Commission to consider forgiveness on that loan. We could use the state's numbers to back that up. Is that fairly accurate to state?
I believe so.
Thank you.
And just one additional idea. We would recommend that the application for loan funds be accepted through the end of 2016, as we anticipate that this decision will have a rippling effect throughout the community, a trickle-down effect. So we would want that application period to be extended out to make sure that any businesses that experience losses going forward are able to still participate.
Did I hear the word forgivable in there anywhere?
I did. I said it. But it has to be, Mr. Chair, it has to be determined by the Claims Commission that would be brought to the legislature, because Claims Commission does not have unilateral authority.
Well, that's one proposal. Another proposal could be that we just put it in the loan application. And that would probably be determined by whether or not the lake recovers. If the lake recovers, then you would think, but I don't know how long that's going to take, because if we're at the 18-year mark that it hasn't recovered yet, either we're doing something wrong or the lake's going in the wrong direction, I guess. I don't know if there's a plan in place that guarantees its recovery. So I don't know what, just based on what Senator Scoia has said and what I saw in that one interview, the taking on more debt isn't something that they want to do. And so the forgivable part of it is probably something we have to figure out how to do it, and that might be the way you're talking about it might be a way to do it. So, Commissioner Bowerly, what do you have?
Mr. Chairman, good morning, members. For the record, my name is Cynthia Bowerly. I'm the Department of Revenue Commissioner. As a starting point, we understand that the current situation both may have a long-term and a short-term effect on local businesses. And as Ms. Chapman mentioned, we don't want to put more burdens on the local economies. We understand that that is that this is a community and that those local governments have a role to play here too. So I just want to clarify that I don't want my comments from yesterday to mean to suggest that we think counties should necessarily be engaging in property tax abatement. We understand the challenges. But in fulfilling this working group's request to look at what is available under current law, and frankly, the direction from the governor early on of what are the things that are immediately available. Property tax abatement is one of those that comes to the list because it is available under current law. So let me share with you a little more detail of what that would look like and what a special session role could be with respect to those property taxes. So property tax abatements are generally available under three areas under existing law. When there is a declared disaster that at least 50% of the property is destroyed.
And that's a federal disaster.
Right? Yes, it has to be declared disaster. And that is one of the limitations on many of the programs that you're familiar with, is that it does have to be a federally declared disaster for it to qualify for some of our existing programs. For economic development programs, as Representative Look mentioned yesterday, TIF financing districts and other property tax relief is sometimes part of economic development projects. And then there is broad authority for county boards for reasons that the board deems just and reasonable. More commonly, we refer to this as the hardship abatement. As you can imagine, counties are fairly reluctant, and the department often cautions them against using that authority too broadly because it can really disrupt the process for how property taxes are levied and collected. But it is existing authority, and it is in the situation where this feels to this community more like a natural disaster, but it's not a declared disaster. This may be an option that they do want to consider. So again, under Minnesota Statute 375-192, counties have authority to abate property tax payments for any reason the board deems just and reasonable. It's a fairly simple process. The application process itself would be filed for abatement from the taxpayer. It could be for a refund of previously paid taxes, or it could be abatement of future paid taxes. And as you know, October payments, you know, property taxes are paid in two stages, and the October payment may be something that some of these local businesses may be thinking about. It includes authority to abate for local governments and school districts as well, but then in that circumstance, the county would need to provide notice and an opportunity for conversation and opportunity to object for those under certain circumstances over certain dollar amounts. And then generally, the auditor and assessor must approve the application and present it to the board. In some, the statute also provides the board to delegate authority to auditors in the counties as well. As we know, this is a community-based problem, so this is certainly something that we know assessors are all and auditors are also thinking about their long-term property base. I don't have hard numbers for you, but it's my understanding from conversations between the department and some of those local officials that property values have been going down. We're seeing a trend down in some of those property values. So certainly this may be an option where a county may look at its short-term, a short-term solution to a long-term gain of being able to maintain these businesses for the longer-term benefit of the property tax base. Again, the department values its relationship greatly with our local partners in the property tax system, and so we would want to have more conversations in detail about them, about how this would fit into their local budgets and what it would mean. Because were, for example, a county to allow for this kind of abatement for the October share, they would need to look either at reserves for the funding for the rest of that budget for the services that they are providing to this community, or they would, and they would then need to either recover that in next year's levy. Again, that's one of the reasons that we have suggested, the governor has suggested, that this the legislature consider a special session to provide for reimbursement to those counties for any abatements that they may want to consider. That would obviously make this a more attractive option for counties. It would give them the capacity to rebuild their budgets in the same year without having to look to the rest of the tax base. And again, it could be done for future levies, or the legislature could decide to do it for refunds for prior year's payments. if the working group is interested in considering legislation to provide reimbursement, there are a number of questions that we would want to have discussion about and seek your guidance on, including what types of property would qualify. Obviously, there are ripple effects on many businesses. Resort properties are probably, you know, more largely impacted than other businesses, but we do know there are ripple effects. So what connection to the walleye closure? And I appreciate the request to be specific, because there is a lot of other fishing going on in that lake. Proximity to the lake, how much of the abatements would be eligible for reimbursement? The department would suggest a conversation around some percentage of the reimbursement as opposed to 100% of the reimbursement. We know that counties, you know, take this situation very seriously as well, and we would like to share that a burden with them. And then again, the time frames. As we've noted, this is not just an immediate short-term problem, but this is a solution that will take some time. And so looking at taxes payable in 2015, refunds of taxes already paid in 2015, and whether looking ahead to taxes payable in 2016 are questions that we would want to have conversations with you about. I had an opportunity to pull some of the numbers together. Representative Luck asked us to look at 15 townships and the payable taxes for those townships. So one of the things I want to make sure we're clear about is that the counties have the authority to abate the county share of taxes. These businesses also do pay as commercial industrial payers on this tax base. There are two classifications. If we just start with the resorts, there are two classifications the resorts fall into: the larger commercial resorts, and then, as Senator Chairman Scoy mentioned, the Ma and Pa resorts, which is the classification of resorts where there is also a homestead. And so for those resorts, I wanted to make sure we're all clear about this, the implications for the statewide business property tax. That class has an exclusion of the first $2.3 million of property. So for those resorts, relief from their statewide property tax actually doesn't provide them with any relief, because they're not paying on that first 2.3. And again, we can certainly provide more detailed information about the numbers of resorts. Our initial look at the same radius that Commissioner Clark Sieben mentioned was, we think there's about 80 resorts that fall into both the commercial space and the mom-pa resort space. And those, as a total, owe about $275,000 in taxes in 2015 to all of the jurisdictions. They owe about 48% of that in county taxes. The city and town shares about 19%. School districts are about 20%. And the state is about 12%. So as you can see, there's a larger share on that local property tax bill that might be of interest to those property taxpayers. So again, we're happy to provide additional detail or look at other runs as you would like us to, as this group wants to identify who might be most impacted and what kind of package might be put together to provide relief. We're happy to provide additional information. And again, we would want to make sure that we are in close conversation. We have talked with the auditors in Crow Wing and in Mille Lacs to talk with them about this. Obviously, they would be reluctant to have this hit on their budget without some reimbursement, but it is an option that is available under existing law. The other option that we have identified under existing law for those local governments is that there is their local government aid. County program aid was certified as of October 1st and is going out this week. Their second half payments are due to them in December, so the department will issue the second half in December. If this situation, whether through abatements or through other circumstances, were to cause a cash flow problem for any of those counties or other recipients of local aid, we could, upon their request and a demonstration that they have a cash flow problem, issue those second December payments as early as August 15th. So that is what we have identified as available under existing law, and what options would be necessary, what a special session would be necessary.
Okay. Any questions of the commissioner? I guess I haven't looked at this. How many counties are we talking about?
Around three.
Three counties. And so if there's other counties in the state that want to use this option, would it be available to them?
Mr. Chairman, the existing authority for abatement of property taxes exists for all counties under current law. For any reason the board deems just and reasonable is the statutory language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that the committee should have some conversation about just because a business is impacted by this, would they qualify? I know when we did the Red Lake program, and granted it is smaller, but there was a gas station that was not right on the lake, but on the way to the lake, that made the case that they were impacted, which I believe they were, but they still were not allowed to qualify for the benefit. And so I think that this group is going to have some conversation about who is eligible for this benefit, and is everybody, just because they're impacted, eligible, or is it only going to be certain types of businesses? At some point, that conversation is going to have to occur.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Commissioner Bowerly, these are, of course, new things to myself and to Tina Chapman. You mentioned the $275,000 number. Could you explain that again to me?
Sure. Let me start with what data we have, and I know you appreciate data. At the state level, we have data about certain classifications of property. To get to particular parcel level data, we often have to go to the counties, and we have not had the opportunity to do that yet. So what we did is look at the classification of resorts in the three counties within townships that were on the lake, so townships touching the lake. And this is, we were just drawing lines to give ourselves some context. So that those may not be the exact appropriate lines. We'll have to look at more. So of those two, the two resort classifications, both the commercial and the Ma and Pa resorts, those approximately 80 resorts was again, our line, and you would be closer to that sort of, to that information. Those are properties that are in that classification. Their property taxes for 2015 total about $275,000.
Thank you for explaining that. So I guess then that my question comes in, that if that $275,000 in taxes owed in 2015, property tax for those 80 resorts, it seems that that number is really underrepresenting the taxes paid, or I have a pretty big bill. Because my own resort on the lake, we pay over $20,000 in property taxes. I don't believe that my resort represents 10% or 8% of the tax base.
So what I don't know about your business, and I'd be happy to talk
it's
with you more about
commercial.
It.
We do not live there. We don't have it homesteaded.
Okay. Is it possible that it also includes other business classifications, not just resort property? So we know there are some parcels on the lake that may have a golf course and a restaurant and then also lodging, and so that property would have different classifications within that one payer's okay. bill. So it could.
We don't have a golf course. We don't have lodging. We have a bar restaurant there and a marina and a fish house park.
Right. So your bar and restaurant would be in the other business industrial property. So that would not be included in the $275,000. So I'd be happy to get again more information about what that total is. We were, as a starting point, thinking about properties that only were in the resort classification. There certainly are other businesses in that same geographical space, and certainly are on the lake and engaged in business related to walleye and other fishing that are in the commercial and the business commercial industrial classification.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, what I would be taking back to my husband or to the rest of our resort community, what's being proposed here is not going to abate our property taxes, but maybe a small percentage of our property tax.
So the governor, what the legislative session would have to consider is, again, what businesses would be available. I apologize if I caused confusion. I was using that as an example of the amount of taxes that are paid by that particular classification of businesses. So it is a subset, and that is not the extent of the proposal. I think what we'd like to do is consider, we know counties have this authority. They certainly will be reluctant to use that without a consideration of potential reimbursement. And so in a special session, we would want to ask the legislature to consider reimbursing property tax abatements in these counties, and it could be a much broader. That was just an example of the only that classification of resort property, not the other businesses. We certainly know there's a lot more property taxes being paid by other classifications in that area.
Okay, thank you. And because I do believe that Representative Erickson had already mentioned to us that our Mille Lacs area accounts for 34% of the tax base for the entire county of Mille Lacs. Is that correct?
Yes.
Not that this matters, but how do you pay your property taxes? Do you pay them in two chunks, or do you pay them on the mortgage as part of the next
personally?
Book? Yeah.
We pay them all at one time.
All right, and do most resorters do that? Or
no.
Most of them pay it as part of a mortgage payment, right? Like the escrow account?
It depends if you have a mortgage. I don't have a mortgage, but I pay it twice a year.
Okay, that's what I wanted.
I'm not giving it up
before. I give them a short-term loan by paying in advance.
All right. Are there any other questions of the commissioner? Mr. Edmund, oops, I'm sorry. Senator Stackhouse.
I have a question. This is back to Ms. Quaid and Ms. Chapman, and I realize you might need some time for this, or maybe some other resorts have an answer to this, but we're making this assumption, and at least at the start, that the walleye season is going to be closed from August 1st to November 1st. What do you think that particular time period annually, that from August 1st to November 1st, what percentage as a percentage, what do you think that is in the income for most resorts and businesses? I mean, I'm just assuming that we have winter fishing, we have opening of fishing till July 15th, you know, and then we have the shoulder season, so to speak. And I'm just wondering what percentage we're talking about here. Should this be in?
I can't say what the percentages is, but the majority of our income, summer income, comes between Memorial or fishing opener, Memorial weekend to Labor Day. Once you get past Labor Day, then you get into your shoulder seasons, but we can also have a very good fall fishing crowd that comes for the full moons. Now, that won't happen this year because of the walleye closure, so that can significantly impact.
But I am interested, you know, and I say this may take some time for you to do, but it's, and I'd like to get some, at least ballpark figures on what the percentage is from that particular, on that particular time period.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few things before we move on to Explore Minnesota and the DNR. I think we need to be a little more specific. I heard Commissioner Sieben make her statements. I didn't hear of a total dollar amount that we might be talking about from your perspective of how many dollars are going to be available, or what are we going to request in a special session? Should we move to a special session to address that issue? I think we need to hear a bit more about some specifics, some parameters, some what's the criteria for being eligible for these loans, who's going to be available for these loans, how far out do we go. I think Senator Skoy made a good point about the one gas station that wasn't going to be eligible for the relief and whatever package that was there at that time. We need to know more about those things, and we need to see some things in writing. So if we're going to move in that direction, I don't know that we are, but hopefully we can do some other things. But we need to see those things in writing. What's the dollar amount? What are we talking about? What are we going to be asking for? What are the parameters? What's the criteria to be eligible for those loans? And whatever else that you might be offering, bringing forward in a special session. So that's all I have at this point. I've got a few other things that I'd like to bring up before we adjourn, but we need to hear from Department of Tourism and also from the DNR, I think, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Edmonds, you actually told us all this yesterday, but as long as you got it on paper, do you want to just give us a quick summary of it again? And just
sure. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Yeah, I did kind of highlight a little bit yesterday about what we're talking about from a tourism perspective, and I have provided a handout trying to address a little bit more specifically about what exactly we're talking about. I guess I just wanted to start out with just sort of almost a personal little story, a conversation that I had with my 16-year-old son last night. I asked him, "So what are you doing this weekend, Jack?" And he said, I'm going up north fishing with a friend and his dad. And I asked, where are you going? And I knew nothing about this. He said he was going up to Mille Lacs. I said, really? You're going up to Mille Lacs? I said, what are you going to be fishing for? And he said, we're fishing for bass and for muskies. And what's interesting to me about that little, and I was kind of amazed that he came up with that, because I've had no conversations with him. He has no clue about this working group or any of the media stuff. But obviously, he's looking for a recreational opportunity, a good time with his friends. Now, my son is the exception. He is just happened because of a relationship that he has with another friend and his father doing this. But most consumers don't really see the recreational opportunities that we're talking about here. And the outline here that I provided and some of the information I provided yesterday was, you know, some of the things that we've done with the legislature and Explore Minnesota to help these communities. We saw this coming. This has not been just an yes, there is a crisis about stopping walleye fishing right now, but we saw this coming for some time, and we've been trying to work with the communities in developing, in the Tourism Bureau, to develop a new brand, a new way to talk about the lake, to talk about walleye fishing, the other kind of fishing, to talk about the other recreational opportunities. But really, to be competitive in this marketplace, and particularly right now with all of this discussion regarding Mille Lacs and walleye fishing, there needs to be a significant effort to reach out to consumers in a wide variety of ways, and it's not easy reaching the consumers. They're being bombarded with messages from all throughout the country and all throughout other states, etc. And so what we proposed was a $400,000 package, very specifically, to market Mille Lacs over a two-year period. And again, the reason I want to emphasize two-year period, because hearing the presentations from DNR, hearing about the situation with the community, this is not going to be something that's going to be solved quickly. It's something that we're going to have to continue the messages out to consumers. We're going to have to change the PR messages. We've got to talk about working with the communities in event planning, getting new events and new partnerships, et cetera. So what we had proposed was something beyond what we've ever done before, what the legislature has ever been done before, in terms of the dollar amounts for this specific community, what's needed out of a legislative, a special session, because we don't have the resources to do something like this now. I know that's one of your questions, and we were talking about it internally. So what could we do now? Well, one of the things that we're doing now, actually, it's not one thing. It's many things. We're using a lot of our resources in digital communications, our social media, our Explorer newspaper, to get the message out to consumers about Mille Lacs. But we really don't think that is going to be enough. So if we did not have any kind of a special appropriation, we continue those things. We continue some of the digital promotions, the social promotions. We have a very small amount. We've given a crisis grant in the past. We have the ability, the statutory authority, to provide up to a $25,000 grant that they don't need to match to help them tie it over. But we cannot do the kind of marketing that we feel that we need to do. That's why we specifically propose a dollar amount at this level that's needed to address this. And it won't be a quick, you know, fix, but we really need to get that message out. We want to work with them, and that's why you have the proposal in front of you.
Can't you use part of that $10 million we gave you over the last couple of years?
Well, Mr. Chair, We could use that, but then that's going to take dollars away from other communities. As we've already committed most of those dollars to various marketing programs throughout the spring, summer, the winter, advertising contracts. We do have a grant program, but if we had to cut that, that would cut programs in from Rochester to Duluth to Brainerd, et cetera. It's just kind of moving the dollars around that's already been committed. So we don't have the ability to really readjust other than that $25,000 crisis grant that I just mentioned.
You used most of it, you said.
We have used most of it.
Yeah, so that leaves some of it left.
That's committed for the rest of the year, yes.
Well, and John, I mean, you will be coming to see us after March 8th. We're talking about just now to get things going. Right. And I'm sure Senator Tomasoni would.
In other words, with Senator Saxhock saying you could use some of that money now to do this, and then we can give you some more money in March. That's what he's kind of saying, I think. You know, so, anyway. Are there any comments or questions with for tourism? So.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I do remember that. I believe it was in maybe 2003 that the legislature did have $100,000 for Lake Mille Lacs tourism.
Yes.
When Judy Kane was. Yes. Thank you. So, I mean, this goes back to a crisis then we had.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the administration could find a way to work with this, knowing that we're committed to come back next year. I mean, we just need to have more data. And I think we should not use the word crisis either. I think that's a word probably that some of the folks in the audience would like to put in the paper. This is an unfortunate situation, but we don't need to blow it up any bigger than it is. The people come up north for a lot of reasons, and one of the most important one is this one fish we're talking about, but they're going to come up this fall for musky fishing, to visit the leaves and do all kinds of things. They do a lot of weddings up there, all those kinds of things. We want to encourage that stuff, and I think let's not blow this up bigger than it is. I think that's important to not do.
Tina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We at Mille Lacs, EMT called it a crisis grant, and we called it a special grant when we referred to it. I just wanted everybody to know that Mille Lacs Area Tourism, we do have our own general budget, and that is based primarily on the lodging tax. So anything that happens with the lodging facilities greatly affects our ability to market. Some of it is voluntary, so we don't know from month to month who may participate or not.
Okay, Commissioner Landwehr, do you have anything new today? And tell me why it's. I would think it's possible to reopen this season, but you just got to figure out how to do it.
If you
use the figures we heard earlier, you got a long way to go on how many pounds we can fish. So just go ahead and tell me if you got any new ideas today and what you're thinking.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members as well. I think you know everybody here understands that. You know, the recovery of the lake is fundamental to getting things back in shape, and so that is our charge, and that's going to be our highest priority. I've got nine things that I've heard that either we've developed or I've heard today that we're going to be acting on, and I'm absolutely wide open to other ideas that we might run with. So I hope we take this opportunity as well to come up with any new suggestions, and we've heard some that I'll reiterate today. We can certainly review, Mr. Chairman, to your point, the fall options with the bands. I will tell you that, you know, the most obvious thing that went through our minds when this came up was that very thing. And so this is not the first time that idea has come up. And there's been substantial discussions around that right now. And I'd offer that I don't believe, you know, there's much there. I don't want to make any false hopes there. But in addition, you know, arguably part of the problem we've got today is because we weren't restrictive enough in the past, and if we continue to, you know, not do the restrictive things we need to do, we're going to be hurting ourselves further in the future. So I will commit to that, Mr. Chairman and members. We will discuss with the bands the options for something in the fall, as Representative McNamara said, perhaps a hooking mortality goes down. Perhaps we use circle hooks. That's actually an idea that was floated to the advisory group, input group, last year. It was not widely accepted, but that is one fishing technique that reduces hooking mortality. So we can that's the first thing. We'll talk to the bands and see if we've got some options there. We are developing a short-term stocking plan. We will have everything in place to do egg take this summer, this spring, at Mille Lacs. As you heard from Mr. Pereira yesterday, we think we've got a facility. We can hatch those eggs. We'll be prepared to do that. I don't want to say right now that we can do that. One of the challenges is, given the limited hatchery capacity we have, if we use a whole hatchery for Mille Lacs, and I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but it will diminish what we can do elsewhere in the state, and we're managing 3,000 walleye lakes. So but we will be prepared to do that, and in fact I will assert that we bias ourselves towards doing that. We are changing our management structure. We've got new DNR staff looking at a new staffing plan for the lake. And currently, there is no sort of one person in charge of the lake. We've got, as I just mentioned, 3,000 fishing lakes in the state. Mille Lacs falls in an area fisheries office, so we've got several different staff that have parts of that. We're going to change it, Mr. Chairman. Some of that is going to be sort of bureaucratic, it's org chart types of stuff, but long and the short of it is we're going to put somebody in place who is the Mille Lacs coordinator with a dotted line to the commissioner's office, so it raises that management visibility to the commissioner's office. We're going to increase the capacity in that location, so in addition to the project manager, some additional outreach. Obviously, education and discussion and conversation goes a long way, and we need to do more of that. We will commit to putting an office on the lake. Getting into the community. We're working out of the Aiken office now. Getting into the community, I think, is going to be very helpful. That bleeds into my fourth proposal, and that is this going back to this notion of a fisheries research education center. By having staff on the lake, not only are we in the community, we're much more open to community members who either want to come in and talk about things or in order for us to put ideas out there. Obviously, we spend a lot of money doing research on the lake. We will continue to do that. This facility would give us the ability to include a hatchery as well, so that we can get over some of those biosecurity concerns. And we've talked quite a bit about the idea of, can this also become an attraction for the area? Can we do educational efforts there for high school kids or for the community? And can we have some displays or something that might make it become a tourist attraction of itself? So we think that that gives us additional capacity, presence, and the ability to do better outreach. We'll create a new advisory committee. We've worked in the past through this public input group. It's kind of a wide open affair, and it's a good way for us to get ideas bounced off the community, see what their reaction is. But I think we would benefit from having a more defined specific advisory group of, say, a dozen members that represent the businesses, the anglers, other interests in the area, so that we can take specific ideas to them and get their recommendations on them. So we've got a very committed, educated group of people who are affected that can come back to us with their reactions to that. In hand in glove with that is to increase the transparency of some of the technical committee work. It's been suggested many times that this is operating in a closed environment, the technical discussions between the state and the band. We did make an effort several years ago to open that up, and Representative Hackbarth has been a representative there, and I think the meetings have been open to another representative or two. We think that is giving, we hope that is giving some comfort that there isn't this, smoke-filled room, backroom discussions going on. But we think that by taking perhaps two of the members of that stakeholder group as well and giving them the ability to observe, not participate, but to observe, might be another way to bring some transparency to the community. I'm going to be talking with Jim Zorn, the executive director of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, as well as the Mille Lacs and Fond du Lac bands, to talk about some other options we might have for that. We will begin coordination immediately with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to talk about the possibility of cormorant control. Ultimately, we need to get a permit from them In order to do that, they've got a kind of high bar for us to demonstrate that there is a demonstrable problem there. But we will start that process now. If we can't demonstrate that it is right now, we'll do what additional work we have to make sure that we're ready when that time comes. We will, in our discussions with the bands as partners, will push the envelope on a winter season. As you heard from Don yesterday, the fall assessment happens in September. That gives us the information on the population to let us know what our subsequent season might look like. We have never had to have this data early before, but we will have it in October so that we can advise the resorters about what our expectations are for the winter season. But again, work with the bands to see what considerations we can get around that season. And then I think there's some other ideas that I want to commit to taking to this advisory committee. I don't have an answer for you today on some of these ideas, but I want to get the committees, get some data in front of a committee that can give us some advice on that. So the bait harvest question, it was suggested that we should not allow bait harvesting in Mille Lacs because those bait fish are food for the walleyes, obviously. What is there for northern pike options to reduce the northern pike? Are there alternative survey protocols to go with what Karen was saying with respect to the creel survey information? And are there events we can do? We did change, as you heard, the bass culling rule yesterday so that we can attract some of these national events. Is there something that we can do to help facilitate those types of events? Those are some ideas that I think we can work with a stakeholder advisor group on and see if they're something there to implement. So, Mr. Chairman and members, those are the nine things that come to my mind. I'm happy to hear any other suggestions we might take forward, and we will begin implementing right now today. Mr. Chairman, I would offer if we were here 3 weeks from today, I could give you a good status report on those items and see where we go.
How about reopening the walleye season?
That's, Mr. Chairman, that was the first thing. It was I call it a fall option. I mean, the reality is, if we go through discussions, if we go through the state register, it would be virtually September before we could do anything anyway. So, but we will entertain those discussions right away, Mr. Chairman.
I think we need to do it sooner. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, and you answered some of my questions. How soon would you be able to shoot some of the cormorants? And then a second question I had, do you have the authority to net northern pike, and would you consider doing that this year?
Mr. Chairman, to the first question, the control of cormorants typically happens in the spring when they're on nests, so the very earliest we would likely do it would be next spring. And that's probably, frankly, how long it would take to get through the federal application process as well. But that's, as I say, we'll start on that right away and see if that could happen. With respect to northerns, I don't know if we have the authority to remove northerns. We'd have to do some work on that, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I guess the one other thing, Commissioner, I've never heard, I know when we talk about the deer herd and increasing the numbers, we know the size of the deer herd. Do we know the pounds of fish that live in Mille Lacs? And I'm just curious, what percentage do we take either by hooking mortality or by taking them home?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, we do. That's part of the annual fall assessment. We develop a population estimate. It's by pounds and by age structure and all kinds of information on it. I couldn't tell you what those specific numbers are. I'm sure Don has those. But in our regulation setting, what we have done historically is we determine what the safe allowable harvest is, and that's how we set our quota. In the past, that's been set at 24% of the spawning biomass, so it's been a fairly significant number. But we can, I don't know if Don can speak to those questions specifically.
Mr. Chair, it's something maybe you can get back to, but I'm curious when we talk about the possibility, or we want to encourage you about the possibility, I don't even know if you're talking about it, of having open water fishing on Mille Lacs yet this year. What percentage of the total take or the total population of the fish are we talking about? I guess I'd like to see that in context of what is the scale of what we're talking about. We've heard the scale of the implications for the business, but I'm curious to know on the fishery, what is the scale of it? I think that would be helpful. And Commissioner, I want to mention, you've talked about you need 3 weeks to get this information to us. we need to put that in the context. We're not ready for a special session. We're a ways away from knowing where we're at. Not, I think we're all committed to reacting appropriately here, but we should act appropriately in a manner that when we know where we're at, what we're up against. And a lot of this is a long ways away yet. So thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, what I'm suggesting is we will have things go in motion in 3 weeks, and I want to be able to tell you that we've taken these substantial steps in that period of time.
Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, we've talked about a number of things today, but I don't want to put words in Representative Tomasoni's mouth, but Senator Tomasoni, but I think he's already said it. We need to move forward quicker on deciding whether we're going to reopen fishing on Mille Lacs for Labor Day or this fall or whatever the case may be. Despite what some of the resorters have said today, we've been getting text and phone calls during this meeting, which is televised, saying, hey, we want this season reopened. This is what's going to help save us now, immediately, without a special session. This is what we need to have. And, you know, they're not so much concerned about being able to take fish, but at least let's have a catch-and-release season. Let's go to the circle hooks. Let's do something to negotiate with the tribes to try to come up with a solution here. Let's work in that regard. And 3 weeks, Commissioner, is too long. I mean, we need to start working on this every day this week until we meet again. And I don't know what that's going to be. I'm hearing that maybe next Thursday might be our next meeting, the soonest that we can make it happen. But something has to be done in that regard. Whatever we can negotiate, whatever we can work out, something has to be done in that regard. I would ask the Commissioner and the Department to work in that direction for an immediate effect economically for the area. We're talking, Representative McNamara, we're talking about mortality rate and fish kill more than anything when we have catch and release only. And that's what we're talking about. And we've heard some discussion today about maybe the DNR's figures aren't quite accurate when it comes to fishing mortality. So hopefully we can move in that direction. That's what I would like to see happen. And I think Senator Tomasoni would like to move in that direction as well.
I would love to see the two of you sit down right there and start talking on how we do it. Yep. Because I believe that this is, I think the DNR pulled the trigger on this. I don't know if the tribe said you have to shut down fishing on Lake Mille Lacs. I don't think that happened. And I don't know if the trigger was pulled too soon or not, but it seems to me that this is a matter of two entities negotiating and saying, okay, if we did take our limit, let us take a little bit more and you can take a little bit more, or whatever the situation may be. But there seems to be a happy medium here to me. And I think we're thinking about the resorters and the people whose businesses are being affected by this. And if we send a message that walleye season is open again, I think it makes a difference to these resorters. I do believe that these people will come back.
Especially an announcement like that, I mm-hmm. think people will be heading back to Mille Lacs again. Yeah. I'm a little bit concerned about a special session as well, Representative McNamara. We've been also getting text about from other state representatives, other senators, saying, hey, I need help in my area. The state has done this to my area, and I need help in this with this other project as well. So should there happen to be a special session, should the governor happen to call that, this would have to be something very, very narrow. There would have to be an agreement from the Senate and the House and the governor's office as to what that might look like. We have to have it very narrowly focused. And if we have it narrowly focused, do we have the votes to pass a package? Because everybody in the state, all the other representatives and senators, are also looking at other issues that are in the state. And the Iron Range needs some help as well. So do we go down that path? And do we have the votes to do something like that? So those are concerns that we're also considering. So Senator Tomasoni,
Commissioner, did you want to say something, Commissioner Fran?
Mr. Chair, thank you. No, I certainly appreciate the concerns that you've all raised. And I think one of the things that I just want to once again set a little bit of stage about the context here. You know, we do have the resources. Yep. We as you know, we closed last session leaving 865 $1 million on the bottom line. We're $555 million above revenue projections thus far this year, leaving $1.42 billion in more than what we have appropriated. Obviously, the November forecast will set this record straight in terms of what kind of balance we have going forward. And the rainy day fund now is at $1.3 billion, the highest it's ever been. The governor is suggesting a very targeted, very specific, short-term project here to get us through to the next session. Clearly, there are always other issues in the state that we have to address and should be addressed. The governor's proposal is about a targeted, specific Mille Lacs program that would provide economic relief for those affected as determined by this working committee or the legislature. Obviously, there are some biology issues that Commissioner Landwehr will be working as well on. But I think the key here is that if we're going to move and we're going to provide immediate relief to folks, we don't have the authority. We have the resources, but we do not have the authority to provide the relief, economic relief, that we think might be helpful during this time period. I appreciate Senator Osnick's suggestion. I'm not personally familiar with the Legislative Claims Commission, but I'm happy to work with him on how that might work. But I just want to make it clear that the idea of repurposing money, for example, from tourism is short-sighted. Director Edmund is doing exactly what he was directed to do with the legislation, and that's come up with programs to help different parts of the state promote different aspects of this state. And to interrupt that process would be detrimental to other parts of the state. You're robbing one area for another. And I know that we government can be nimble at times, and you want us to be nimble, we can, but sometimes there's a cost in that. And it's particularly difficult, I think, to be that flexible and make those kinds of changes. He has some ideas he can do right away, but you are taking money from other resources. We do have the resources to make an appropriate investment if this working committee deems that's appropriate.
So thank you, Commissioner. We have some people who wanted to say some things, and I probably should have introduced the County Commissioner, Dave Oslin, here. Dave, did you want to say something? Just say your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Oslin, Mille Lacs County Board. Most of what I was going to say has been said, but I would like to add to the conversation how far-reaching the economic impact is. Just yesterday, our Richard Baker from the county, our economic development person, it was 40 miles from the lake, and he stopped in a restaurant, and a conversation came up, and their business is down because of this year with the lake, and they're certainly far out from the group we're talking about. That was in Pease, Minnesota. So I wanted to reiterate that, and also with our county, of course, it's all been stated. We very much have concerns. We're a high-tax county to begin with. Our tax capacity is low, but I especially, would like a conversation with Commissioner Bowerly afterwards. I would appreciate that in regards to abatements and things and the options. Perhaps we could even line up a session with the full county board. But I wanted you folks to know, too, that we at the county level not only are concerned, but we have been anticipating a storm, so to speak. And along those lines, for the last 4 years here, we've made some efforts to be more business-friendly and actually more residential-friendly. And we've made those lines through new comprehensive plans, rezoning of districts, and also reducing of regulation while still protecting the environment. Because we knew we had some problems there. And so we're making strides in that area. And then, of course, the storm hit. So I just wanted you folks to, who are deciding these very important issues for a lot of people, to know that we haven't been just sitting idly by and, wondering what's going to happen. But I do appreciate the opportunity to be here, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Ellen Heim still here? Ellen, do you want to say something? Come on down to the table down here if you want to speak. Just introduce yourself for the record.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alan Heim. I'm the county assessor for Mille Lacs County, and I have received a few calls on some of the market value effects and things like this that have happened. And as Commissioner Osland had mentioned, this is it's going to have an effect for some time to come. And it also affects, you know, it obviously affects the businesses, the resorts, and so on. Even just the overall tax base of the county is being affected dramatically. District 5 represents, and this has been noted, about 34% of the tax base of the county. District 5 is the commissioner district that encompasses the Mille Lacs Lake area. The difference between the 2014 and 2015 assessment estimated market values, there was nearly a $31 million reduction in estimated market value between the 14 and 15 assessment. And this was just primarily due to a change in the lakeshore value based on you know, past market activity. The things that are happening today are actually, with regard to our tax base, aren't going to be fully realized until we get out to about taxes payable 2018. What happens in today's market going forward is actually going to take until about 2018 before it's realized fully, as far as the detrimental effects this is having on our overall tax base. Questions? That I just basically just wanted to point out that you know, we've got a long road ahead of us yet. We've got a ways to go. This effect on the market obviously is more than just the resorts and businesses. This is the homeowners, seasonal property owners, and everyone involved. So,
okay, all right, thank you. And is Richard Baker still here? Welcome to the working group. Just go ahead and say your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Chairs. I'm Richard Baker. I'm the Community Development Coordinator from Mille Lacs County. Just to kind of reiterate from what Dave and Al have said previously, you know, that $31 million impact that Al talks about in just in the last year, which is just the two-inch slot limit and, you know, two-fish thing, that equates out to about $700,000 in taxes for of lost revenue for the county. And we're already an economically depressed county with high unemployment. And sat and listened to the tax abatement comments, you know, we as a county, it's pretty easy to do tax abatement when it's a new development because, you know, anything times zero is zero. So for us to be able to abate those taxes for 8 or 10 years, you know, we didn't have that there anyway, and we know that, you know, in 8 or 10 years we'll start to collect those taxes. But as far as trying to do a hardship tax abatement, the county can't afford it. The school districts can't afford it. You heard the disasters that are going on there. You know, the townships can't and cities can't afford it. Like I said, this is a far-reaching economic impact. Cause like I said, I talked to a small restaurant in a community of 241 people, one of five businesses. One of those businesses is working out of a trailer because they got burnt out this winter. The owner's looking at it about 10% drop in revenue right now is what she estimated. Because of people not stopping, coming back and forth between the lake. So like I said, we have main streets that are hurting. It's gift shops, it's the plumbers, you name it. You know, there's a lot of people are being hurt by this. So whatever plan we do decide to do, we do need to keep those people in consideration. So, and I do appreciate the plug for tourism and promotion and the development of amenities, the looking at the fish hatchery long term as a option for tourism, all great things that area needs, and will help us in the long run. But our business people need that short term right now, that 0% you know, forgivable loan or a 0% loan where they can just get that cash just to pay those employees that live week to week and pay that gas bill and those property taxes that are coming up. So, anyway, that I thank you for your time.
Thank you. I realize the only person at the table we haven't heard from is Mr. Nakwanabi, and yeah. I don't know if you want to add something here.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Kind of reserving my comments here for the end. I felt awkward not saying anything so far because that's not like me. I'd be remiss not to thank the members for their comments and their recognition of what we've done with suspending the walleye harvest next year. My father was one of the drum keepers, one of the traditional people that participated in that meeting. That group of people, those drum keepers, they carry centuries of knowledge and wisdom and stories about who we are as people. And for Chief Benjamin to go to them in the fashion that she did, to ask them for their guidance and for them to grant what they did, was truly a big thing for our community. And my father was very happy to know that you guys respected that. So I wanted to pass that and share that with you guys. So my role with the band, I'm the CEO of Mille Lacs Corporate Ventures. We're the economic development arm for the Mille Lacs band. We are responsible for running our current businesses, our two biggest businesses, obviously our Grand Casino Mille Lacs and Grand Casino Hinckley, but we're much, much bigger than that as a company and what we do across the state. We're also expanding geographically, but one of our core principles of what we do in business is to try to invest in East Central Minnesota, both in the Mille Lacs community as well as in our Hinckley community. And there's three things that we focus on. We focus on tourism, we focus on creating jobs, and we focus on creating taxes for the people and the communities that we live in, for both the counties and the state, the regions where we do business. All three of those things are not equal, and two of them are effects, one of them is a cause, and we work really hard on the cause, which is tourism. And the Carville said it's the economy stupid. I would say in this case, it's not the fish stupid, would be the thing I would throw out there. It's about development. We've done great work with the county and what we've done with Eddie's Resort to redevelop that site. We knew there were deficiencies in our business. We knew what was coming down the pipe, and we knew we had to reinvent ourselves. So we changed ourselves from something oriented around a single demand driver, that being walleye, and we changed ourselves to become more things to more people, and trying to meet more needs and take advantage of the opportunities that are out there, being an hour and a half from the Minneapolis area. So I hear these things, and I wish I could say that our resort is down, but our resort isn't down. Eddie's is doing fine. We're doing way better than we did before. We were what we were before the redevelopment. The only business, we are down 20% to 30% in our marina business, but our food and beverage business and our hospitality business is fine. And that's because we saw what was coming. We created a vision to pivot, and we've created things that we think the Twin Cities area and the region wants, and that's why we think we're doing fine. More of that has to happen. The icons on the lake that create a destination for people to go to are gone. You know, you think about the Blue Goose. People know what the Blue Goose is. The Blue Goose is a Burger King now. How did we let that happen? Why? You know, we need things that attract people. And the walleye is certainly an important part. Would we be up? When walleye is good, business is going to be up. No question about it. But there's got to be other demand drivers. And those are the things we're focused on as a business, are creating those demand drivers, investing in the community, and being a partner. You know, I shook Bill Eno's hand yesterday, which was a big deal for me. He doesn't interact with the band ever. You know, we have a good relationship with the Area Tourism Council. We love that. So the togetherness and the cooperativeness of sharing the economic impact, sharing the sacrifices. Those are the things that are going to push business forward in the area. From a tourism standpoint, the budget is just not big enough. Rochester, Duluth, Brainerd, all respect to those people. They're not in a position that we are. We're reinventing ourselves. We were Coke, and we're trying to become Sprite, and that's a big deal. We can't just advertise that something's different. We have to truly make something that's different. And our company's dedicated to that. We're dedicated to investing in the area. Eddie's is one project. It's a $15 million project we put out there, and we're going to do more, and we're dedicated to that and committed to that. The state and some of the things that you folks could do is to make the environment better for developers like us and incentivize us to do those things so that we can do them quicker and we can do them with even more vision than what we have. I've found it a little bit hard to engage in the short term, you know, these short term discussions, and that's maybe why I was so quiet, because we look so far out about what we think the lake can be and should be. We know it's not just walleye. We know that it can be much more, and that's what we're committed to. And I do want to share that with you guys. We, Mille Lacs Corporate Ventures, we're committed to working with the community in this group to do whatever we can. I have an army of MBAs and smart people that work for us. We run a Fortune 500 size business in the middle of Minnesota. We know what we're doing, and we're willing to help, and our doors are open for discussions. So thank you, Chairman.
So you didn't say anything about reopening the walleye season.
Yeah, good point. I wish I was a fisherman. I'm not. I'm a businessman. So I couldn't comment on that stuff.
Not for you. Fish stupid is maybe the good part. I don't know. Anyway, Commissioner, did you want to say one last thing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to state one last thing, and that is in regards to the county and how they function and operate, which I'm sure you're well aware. You folks down here really know what it means to have the votes to do something, and I just wanted to share that whenever the District 5, the North District of Mille Lacs, loses value, the other districts have to pick that up. And primarily it's the three districts in the center of the county, Representative Erickson's area, and I just want to let you know that basically the center of our county is primarily farming area, and also I serve on the board with three farmers. So when it comes to abatements, I just wanted you all to be aware of that. Thank you.
All right, any other comments from anybody on the working group here? Commissioner, I'd love to have you sit down with the tribes and see if you can figure something out before Labor Day and get Mille Lacs open again.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbar, sooner than that, I would like them to start working on it immediately. Well, I mean, we're going to be meeting next week, and we need to know some of these things. I think the resorts are waiting to find out. They're going to have to know whether there's going to be an ice fishing season or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to have to happen. So I hope they start working on that immediately.
Well, I was hoping this weekend it would be open for the weekend. So I would love to see you sit down and make a decision real quickly, because I think you can. I'm thinking next Thursday for the next meeting. Does that work for people? Should we do it 10 o'clock in the morning one? You'll be chairing. Okay, so then let's plan on 10 o'clock in the morning next Thursday for the next working group meeting.
If there's going to be any handouts or any other information or anybody that wants to testify, please contact Stephanie.
All right. With that, thank you, everybody. Meeting adjourned.